So I'm going to read our theme and then I'm going to turn it over to Stacy. Our theme is going to be abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164.
Right. We will start this meeting off with a moment of silence for the still suffering alcoholic, both in and outside of these rooms. May we have that moment now. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant me to seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I'll pass it over to Stacy to introduce the speaker.
Yay. Thanks. Man, you're killing it with that prayer stuff. Okay, so Deb is phenomenal. If you don't know Deb, so I've been listening to Deb since day one of my sobriety when somebody handed me some speaker tapes. And the cool part is that I don't know how long you've been sober, a long time, way longer than I, you know, I think I've been alive. But I heard her first talk was, she was like, I don't know, 10 years sober or 15 years sober or something like that. And then I heard a different talk and you were, you know, 17 years sober, and then after Lee and all of that. And so through these talks, I've been able to hear how your spiritual walk has changed and evolved. And I know that I'm alone in my car and I'm listening to speaker tapes, and I'm like, well, if she's growing spiritually, then I'm growing spiritually, you know? And so just personally and recently, so I'm a nurse. That's a gift of recovery. I went back to school in sobriety and became a nurse, and I'm a COVID nurse. And that wasn't the choice or the dream of the job, but that's what's happening in the state of the world. And Pat O just talked a lot about that, you know, and what we're doing. And, that's been a struggle. It's been a real struggle for me recently. And you know, everybody is struggling with COVID, and it's just my own take on it. Nobody's struggle is worse or better than anybody else's. Right. I got to reach out to Deb to do this talk today. And then somebody else had said, hey, you should call Deb about this struggle that you're having, just her job and blah, blah, blah. And so I got to connect with her on a different basis. And my 11 step has taken off in the last month and a half that we've been getting to talk. And so I'm so grateful for that. So I'm going to read step four, this too. I text her, I need a reading, please. And she says the first two paragraphs in the 12 and 12 on step four. And I go, well, you're talking on step 11. She says, I know. And I go, okay, all right. So I literally had to get up and get the book and go, wait, what are they teaching me? You know, cause I don't know these things. So here we go. So the first two paragraphs out of the 12 and 12 on step four. Creation gave us instincts for purpose. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. If men and women didn't exert themselves to be more secure in their persons, made no effort to harvest food or construct shelter, there would be no survival. If they didn't reproduce, the earth wouldn't be populated. If there was no social instinct, if men cared nothing for the society of one another, there would be no society. So these desires for the sex relation, for material, for emotional security, for companionship, for perfectly necessary and right, are perfectly necessary and right and surely God-given. Yet these instincts, so necessary, for our existence often far exceed their proper functions. Powerfully, blindly, many times subtly, they drive us, dominate us, and insist upon ruling our lives. Our desires for sex, for material and emotional security, for an important place in society often traumatize us. That's not that word. When thus out of joint, man's natural desires cause him great trouble, practically all the trouble there is. No human being, however good, is exempt from these troubles. Nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case for misdirected instinct. What when that happens, our great natural asset and instincts are turned into physical and mental liabilities. I can't wait to hear what that means. Thanks, Steph.
Thank you, Stacy. My name is Deb. I'm a real alcoholic. I'm super grateful to be with all of you. I'm grateful that I made Stacy actually open her 12 and 12 to see what in the world my reading had to do with step 11. My sobriety date is March 15th, 1987. And for that, I'm just stupid grateful, right? I live a life today that I absolutely would not have known to ask for, because I was always the girl that was willing to settle for just enough, right? Like physical sobriety, I would have stopped right there. I remember I was having a conversation with someone when I was, 18 or 19 years old. I was, living in an apartment on the edge of Ohio State's campus, couple, 3 years sober at the time. And I just told this guy, I was like, man, if I could just figure out a way to make $1,000 a month, like I would be so set. Right. And I swear to God, like as soon as I hit $1,000 a month, like I would have continued to live in a way where $1,000 a month covered everything. Right. I would have continued to say, no, like I can't afford to go, get that new dress. I can't afford to go to that restaurant with you. I can't afford to get a car that actually runs, that's not in the shop all that's right. Like that's just kind of where I come from, is this idea that there's never enough of anything. And so if I can just get barely enough to cover the basics, I'm going to be okay. And that's all I need. And I have always been the girl that would settle for just enough. And what happened for me is that when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and came all the way in and sat all the way down in 1987, old timers at donut shops after meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous tricked me into participating with a God of their understanding. Right? Not a God of my understanding, because I had no understanding. Like, I had no concept of God at all, right? I had a concept of a higher power, because my father has this case of alcoholism that's just brutal. And so I understood that there were things in this world that had more power than me. But what I was never able to identify with was the fact that there was a power that was actually benevolent. Right, that would be interested in having a relationship with me, that would get directly involved in the conduct of my life, that would provide for me when I couldn't provide for myself, or wait for it, that would provide for me even when I could provide for myself. Right? Like that idea that there was this God thing out there that just wanted to have a relationship with me, right? Wanted me to just glance his way and just check in with him every now and then, and that's all it took. Like I'm like, yeah, right, whatever, right? Like that's the unicorn. And what happened for me early in my sobriety, thank God, is that I started hanging out with people who were spiritual giants. And these people who are spiritual giants, like, they're not the speakers on the circuit. They're not the people, who have, CDs and things like that. They're not the Chuck Chamberlains and the Sandy Beaches and the Don Pritzes of the world. These are, retired steelworkers and retired members of the United Rubber Workers from the Rubbermaid factory in Worcester, Ohio. I mean, these are salt of the earth people. who had come to know God in this really lovely and intimate and simple way. And in putting me onto the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, they also made me insanely curious about this God thing. And we are a society of master storytellers, and I'm all about that right now. And our story is our greatest asset, right? I don't ever want to do so much teaching or instruction in Alcoholics Anonymous that it is divorced from my story, because I think that that takes me into dangerous territory, because then I'll think that I somehow know more than someone else. And what I know is that I have had a deep and effective spiritual experience that continues to unfold for me today. And it required nothing of me other than I show up, and every time my mind would be open just a smidge, God would wedge himself into the gap, and he would push it open just a little bit more. And that's what these members of Alcoholics Anonymous did for me in those donut shops after those original AA meetings. One of the early experiences I had with this idea that there was a God who not only existed, right? Like step two, came to believe, right? Got that part. And I got that part because there were people right in the donut shops who believed. And so I came to believe because they believed, right? It was that simple. Well, if this stuff is working for them, then by God, there must be a God, right? But then, can I actually strike some kind of deal to participate in some kind of a relationship with this God thing? And so I entered into, right, this deal-making process, which was my step three. And so, and then the deal-making process, it was pretty simple. It was like, okay, God, so I'm going to actually participate in a relationship with you, and I'm going to consult you every now and then, because that's all I can do, but consult you every now and then, and, just check and maybe weigh in every now and then and see what you have to say about some of these things, right? And when I do that, you are to care for me. And in caring for me, right, like you need to nudge me like in the right direction. I mean, that was essentially my first step three, right? Nothing wildly spiritual about that, but it was just this kind of, it was this transactional deal. And that was enough, right? And I keep going back to that and saying, okay, God, like we have been in relationship now for X number of years. And it has become very, very clear to me that God is far more faithful to me than I've ever been to him, right? Like he shows up in ways for me that I didn't even know to ask him to show up, right? Like I was listening to a talk, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling a little bit. I was listening to a talk by, in my mind, the late, great Sandy Beach. The last time that he and I were at a conference together, And he was, they'd asked him to tell his story, and he said no, because he said, I'm kind of bored with my own story, but I will do a spiritual workshop for you. And, which caused people like me to celebrate, right? Because Sandy was one of my messengers, right? He was one of those guys that I could actually hear. And I cannot remember what I was going to share with you about that. Anyway, but Sandy's one of those guys that I can always hear. And so when he shares with me, he was an incredible storyteller, right? And so he would tell stories that would somehow like get in, and it would convince me that I could go deeper than I was ever going. It would convince me that there was more to my spiritual experience than what I could see. It would convince me that more was being revealed. And I remember what it was he said that day. He said, that there's that saying that says, that God will not give us more than we can handle, right? And that, and he's always going to be there with us to handle the big stuff. And he was like, God's there and is going to handle the stuff that we can't even handle. Like, God's going to be with us, whether it's big stuff or little stuff. God's going to be with us, whether it's stuff that I can handle because I do on a daily basis, or whether it's the big stuff where I think that maybe I'm going to need him to weigh in or some spiritual help. And he was like, so why don't we just go to him all the time? Like, why don't we take everything to him? Right? It's like it's this other layer of God is either everything or he is nothing. Right? Like, I've been throwing that term around for years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, God is either everything or he's nothing. What is your choice to be? And I was like, oh, my choice is that he's everything. But are you really acting like it? You know, and that should come with a dun, dun, dun. Right? Because most of the time, the answer would be no. Like, I'm handling the normal stuff in my life all by myself. Thank you very much. Right? I am a skilled sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got this. Right. But then, you know, when things get a little bit more serious, well, then maybe I will, you know, turn in prayer and meditation to God. And Sandy was like, why are you waiting? Like, why are you not just going all in with him every single day? Why aren't you giving him everything all the time? And I was, and I sat there when he asked the question, right? And I don't know, I was sober 20 some years at that point. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, do I go all in? Like, have I gone all in? And I was like, I've had these moments, right? These experiences in my life where I have been more connected. I've been so connected to God at various points in my life that I've had sponsees call and ask me to come back down to earth. Right? They're like, hello. Like, can you use normal language, please? Can we go back into the book? Right? Can we get concrete again? Right? And so I'd had those kinds of moments, but then I was like, but man, that stuff, it comes and goes, it waxes and wanes, right? Like, I am not always in the middle of this amazing spiritual practice, right? Like, in my spiritual pursuit, in my spiritual experience of God, I am so human. I am so human, right? I mean, you know, we're doing this prayer thing, right? Where there's a small group of us who are doing this prayer on a daily basis, and we did the first 9 days of it, and the deal was we do this prayer and then we sit quietly for 5 minutes, and you know, and we started with 5 minutes because I knew the group that I was working with, and there are some folks in that group that could not sit still for 5 minutes initially, right? And some of them have reported in that they're now up to 10 minutes, right? So it's growth. And, you know, and there are days when I'm the one that's, you know, fidgety and struggling to sit still for 5 minutes. And I keep going back to the fact that God doesn't make too hard of terms with those who seek him. And I'm so incredibly grateful for that. Right. And just because I don't nail my spiritual practice today does not mean that I need to not nail it tomorrow. Right. Like, just because I fall into a period of obstinance, for some reason I stop praying, does not mean that that has to last beyond the moment when I realize I've been obstinate. And so, you know, this step 11 process, this growth, right, this continuation of the spiritual experience doesn't have to be perfect. And it doesn't, you know, it's much better when I'm really consistent, right? My awareness of God, my flow with God, my ability to actually, direct sponsees to spiritual material and into a deeper experience with him is better when I'm on the top of my game with my spiritual practice. But my experience tells me that I'm going to continue to be really human. My experience tells me that I nail it far more today than I did when I had 15 years sober, but I don't nail it every day. And that's not what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is about, right? It's not about perfection. We're supposed to strive for perfection. We're supposed to strive for the 100%. But none of us actually get there. And so anyway. So one of the other teachings that I had early on that I'll share with you, and then I'll get into some other stuff, is that I used to go to this meeting, and I talk about this sometimes in my pitch, in Fredericksburg, Ohio, which is this little tiny Amish agricultural community. There's an AA group down there. They meet on Thursday nights. It's a lead meeting, or a speaker meeting, as it's called in other places. And that meeting is, so Amish, the recovering Amish community, many of those members go there, as do many of the Mennonite members. So there are a lot of members that go to that group who are deeply religious. And they too are working to have a spiritual experience, right? But they are deeply religious. And after that meeting, particularly on the last Thursday of the night, it's pie night in this Amish community. And so, like, the audience or the participation in the meeting for pie night would always triple in size for obvious reasons, right? Because if you can have homemade pie made by Amish bakers who know what they're doing, why wouldn't you? Right, it's worth an extra 20-minute drive to get there for pie night, and there's a man. His name's Danny, and Danny is the elder Amishman who's a sober member, and Danny would sit afterwards, and he got into this ongoing argument with this guy from Akron. His name was Jeremiah, and Jeremiah had a rock for a higher power. Right. Jeremiah was this, he really wanted to be an atheist, but he was kind of an agnostic, and he had a rock for a higher power. And so Jeremiah and Danny would sit after the Fredericksburg lead meeting, and we would be having our, you know, our coffee and our sweets like we did every week. And the two of them would argue about God. And it was awesome. I mean, just, it was like, for me, like in my first year or two of sobriety, it was like watching this really cool tennis match, you know, like back and forth and back, because, you know, Danny was, you know, Danny looked at him one night and he said, "You're just an idiot, right? If you think that that rock is going to be big enough for you when you really need God to show up, you're an idiot." Right. And Jeremiah was like, "You can't say that, because this rock can go 24 hours without taking a drink, and that's all I need." And you know, and Danny would be like, "That's just stupid. Like, how can you even think that?" And so, and these men would argue like that, and they argued like that, I mean, week after week after week after week. And like, there were times when I was like, "Can we go to Fredericksburg? Like, it's Thursday, because I need to see what's going on between these two men." Right. And it was all, and I asked Danny one night, I said, "Why do you continue to argue with Jeremy? Like, you know, he's never going to get to where you are in your relationship. Like, he's never going to believe what you believe." And Danny said, "He doesn't have to, but he has to open his mind enough so that God gets bigger than a damn rock." And I was like, "Whoa, got it." And Danny said, "I believe that if I keep arguing, that the day he lays down his rock, I'll get to watch it." And any day that Danny got to watch God work in someone else's life was a banner day for Danny. And I was just like, you know, and so these are some of the spiritual teachers that I had early on, right? And they were showing me and teaching me through these stories and through these experiences that, that the road to God really is broad, roomy, and all inclusive, right? Like, it's fine that I start with a rock for a higher power, but can I just have a smidge of an open mind, right? So that God can slip in and maybe push it open just a little bit more. And to me, that's really what the 11th step has been about, right? Can I just keep this much of an open mind so that God can get in there and can just keep opening, right? It's this continual opening. It's the opening of my mind. It's the opening of my heart. It's the opening of my willingness to acknowledge that God is active in my life. It's the opening of me to the idea that this is a gift I'm being given, and that I deserve it, that I am worthy of a relationship with God that continues to grow, that I'm worthy of it. So that's step 11 for me, right? And when I started my spiritual journey, I did not know how to pray. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not know how to pray because I wasn't raised in church. I wasn't raised with any experience of God at all. And so I didn't know what I was doing, which I don't know what it would have been like to have a different experience because that was my experience. But that was the deal. I didn't know how to. So they were essentially starting with what they believed was a blank slate, what I believed was a blank slate. And so I was able to start on this journey, and I was like, all right, if it's going to take God to keep me sober, then I guess I got to have a relationship with God. Like, I, whatever, I'm just doing what I'm told. And I started praying by reading little prayers out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? On my knees at the edge of my bed. And I literally started praying with one eye open so that I could read the words off the page because I was scared to get the words wrong. And from those very first days, right, to today, I pray to God in all kinds of ways today. I mean, in all kinds of ways. That whole pray without ceasing thing, I'm not able to pull it off very consistently, but I pray often throughout the day. You know, there was a time in my life when my eyes would pop open, I would be like, okay, God, I guess you gave me another day. What is it that you want me to do with it? And then I would get out of bed and I would take a shower and brush my teeth and drink a cup of coffee and go to work. And at the midpoint of my day, I'd be like, okay, God, I'm at work. I guess this is what you intended for today. Like, what do you got for the rest of the day, right? And after work, I'd be like, all right, well, that was kind of uneventful. Do you have something else for me today, right? And I would go eat dinner at an AA member's house, and I would go to an AA meeting, right? And it was just, but it was just that constant checking in with God. Another thing that Sandy said in one of his later talks, and this is something that I had aspired to as well and do aspire to, is he said, it is my ultimate spiritual goal that when someone walks up to me and says, "Oh, Sandy, so what do you do?" That I look at them and I'm able to say, "I just do what I'm told. No more, no less. I just do what I'm told." And I was like, whoa, wouldn't that be cool, right? Rather than telling you what I do for a living and defining myself by roles and defining myself by relationships and all of that kind of stuff. If I could just say, I belong to God and I do what I'm told. Whoa. I mean, that would be an impressive moment in my life. And so I aspire to get there. So they tricked me onto the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They tricked me into learning how to pray, these old timers in my life. They told me that when I prayed, like when I finished praying, I needed to just sit there and just breathe. And I was like, why? And they said, because you talk to God and then you listen to God. And I was like, but he doesn't say anything. And they were like, just sit there. You'll be all right. And I was like, whatever, right? And so that was my introduction to meditation. Like, just sit still. Just for the love of God, literally just sit still. And that was literally where I started. And I've gone through all kinds of different practices as I've been a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I have turned myself into all kinds of people who do all kinds of interesting spiritual practices. And I'd be like, hey, can you teach me a little bit about Buddhism, right? I sponsored a guy who was a Hindu once. And I was like, hey, teach me what this Hindu stuff is about, right? Like, are there bits and pieces of that I could pick up that I could add to my concept of God or to my spiritual practice? And every single time I have walked up to somebody and said, I think that you're having a level of spiritual experience or a level of relationship with God that I'm unfamiliar with. Can I just spend some time talking to you about how you got there? I have never had anyone turn me away, ever. people are always willing to sit down and talk to me about their experience of God. And so, and that's really, that is what the growth of God's presence in my life has been like, right? I walk up to people, like, so be really careful, right? Because if I hear you give a pitch in Alcoholics Anonymous or make some consistent comments at a comment meeting, and it seems like you're connected in a way that is unique or deep, I'm likely to come and just sit down with you and say, so can you just talk to me about God, please? Like, I want to know what you do, how you do it, why you do it, right? Like, where did you start from and where did you end up, right? So I am courageous in seeking your story about your experience of God. And that has paid incredible dividends. So one of the moments in my life, so there were a couple of moments in my life where I grew big time spiritually, and I'm going to tell you those stories. So one of those stories is that it was in 2005. So I was sober, I don't know, a while. How sober was I in 2005? Like 14 years, maybe, something like that. 87, 97, yeah. And God is trying to get my attention, right? Because surrender is a process, not an event, right? And spiritual growth is all about surrender. Every single time something new is revealed to me, I must surrender it. And in surrendering it, what I'm actually doing is saying to God, uh-oh, I just saw this thing. I would like you to take it and do with it what you will. But it is yours now. It is yours now, right? You direct my life. You direct me through this. If I'm meant to lay it down, please take it. If I'm meant to carry it forward, you know, please give me the strength to carry it, but it's yours. And so in 2005, like, a lot of stuff was being revealed to me. And what God was saying to me, like, I had this spiritual practice. Like, I was doing very consistent prayer, very consistent meditation. I was actually practicing two-way prayer from the Oxford group. And if you guys don't know anything, I would encourage you to go look up two-way prayer and learn how the Oxford group members did it. But it's a lovely, lovely experience where you actually, the majority of prayer is you're praying for guidance for someone else, right? And doesn't our 11th step say that, you know, that we pray for others rather than ourselves? And so in that, and in the way that's written, you spend a ton of your time in prayer petitioning God on someone else's behalf. So I would pick up your plight and I would take it to God in prayer over and over and over. And then you sit at the end of prayer. You sit with a piece of paper and a pen and you know, on the table or on your lap or whatever, and you sit quietly and you anticipate God's guidance. And if something comes to you in your period of sitting still following prayer, and you know, sitting in expectation that God is going to come and going to weigh in, you just write down everything that God has revealed, and then you call your prayer partner and you say, okay, this is what I think I got out of my period of guidance. And you check it with someone else, because, you know, it talks in our book about the fact that, you know, when we're praying for God's sign and we get it, right, we're like, we are likely to say, well, that was a sign from God, right? Oh, she said yes to coffee, therefore she must be my next wife. You know, like, we can call anything a sign from God, and they're not, right? And anyway, so you call your prayer partner and you check the guidance that you've gotten. So that is really the foundation of my spiritual practice, right? So I am connected with God. I am praying. I'm talking with Him. I am sitting quietly. My life, if you looked at my life, it was, I was doing great, right? I mean, I was living within my means. I was doing meaningful work. I was sponsoring people. I was sponsored. I had a home group. I was doing service work. I was, traveling around and giving talks at AA conferences from time to time. like my life, I'm hitting it on all cylinders. I had finally, I had finally selected and was dating a really good guy, right? Who was not only handsome, right? Which is requirement number one still. He was not only handsome, but he was also like really kind and financially self-supporting, and he was a good leader, and he, he was a major in the Marine Corps, and he was, he was just a guy who lived a life of service. And God, for some reason, kept coming to me during these periods of guidance. When I was praying for you, he was coming and talking to me about me, which really, I was like, this, doesn't fit, right? Like, I'm praying for Stacy. You should be giving me guidance about Stacy. And he kept coming to me over and over, and this was the message. He said, I have perfect love to give you, and you continue to block me. Please give me the rest. Please give me the rest. And I was like, and I would be sitting there and I'd be like, what do you mean the rest? Like, I am sitting here in prayer meditation. I am seeking a deeper relationship with you. I am doing good work. Like, I am, right? I got the home group. I got the service position. I'm doing the sponsoring. I'm like, what is it that you want? And God kept coming and saying, give me the rest. I have perfect love to give you, right? Because he knew, right? Because he knows me better than anyone else, that I'm the get by girl, right? I'm going to get just enough to get by, and I'm going to settle and stop right there. And he kept saying, look at this really handsome man who's a good guy finally, right? You finally got your picker fixed a little bit, right? And so he's a great guy, but and God came to me in meditation when I was in Louisiana getting ready to talk at the Louisiana State Convention. And he said, essentially, I want you to be in a relationship with someone who loves me. And I was like out of all of his good qualities, like you're going to hone in on the one thing where there's a little gap, right? Like the one thing where there, and you know, but in our book, it says that, you know, we reach a point where we want to grow spiritually. And so we let God discipline us, right? That's one of the things I get out of this connection with God, is that we let God discipline us. And so God's coming to me and he's saying, look, like I want you to have this really full experience, and you're continuing to settle. And I was at a point where I wasn't comfortable anywhere unless I was on my knees in prayer meditation. That was the only place I could get comfortable for a couple of weeks. And at that conference, there was an old timer there. His name was Walter from Houston. And Walter was one of my messengers. And Walter was at that conference, and he was speaking on Sunday morning. And he came up to me on the Thursday when we got there. And he said, I don't travel and talk at these things very often, but when I do, it's usually because I'm there to talk to one person specifically, and I think that person's. And I was like, I got this. Like, my life is, I'm doing all the stuff I'm supposed to be doing, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm a speaker too, and I got this, And he's like, So I would just recommend that on Sunday morning when I speak, like, you sit up front with my wife and you bring some tissues. I have a feeling that that God has a message for you. And I was like, ugh. So I show up, I sit up with his wife. I didn't bring tissues because I'm obstinate. She brought tissues for me. And he gets up and he delivers this pitch where he talks about his relationship with God. And he talks about courageous spiritual growth by going where God leads you. And I knew what he was, and I started to weep. Now, I had been crying all weekend, right? Because I am exhausted. I am wide awake all the time on my knees in prayer meditation. God's having his way with me. I'm having this spiritual rearrangement is what I call them, right? I'm in the middle of this spiritual rearrangement. I'm resisting, which makes it that much harder. And he comes and he delivers that deal. And I was like, oh. And so I go home from that conference and I have dinner with Lee the next night and I end the relationship with him. Right. And he's fine. Like, he's the good guy and I end the relationship with him and I described to him why, like I told him what Walter had said from the podium and what that experience meant for me. And the fact that, in order to be a sober member of Alcoholics, like, this is what's going to have to happen. And he just looked at me and he said, let me get this straight. You're leaving me for God. And I was like, yes. And he's like, are you sure it's not another guy? And I was like, oh man, that would be so much easier. Right? Like I know how to play that tune, but no, this is about my spiritual growth. And what happened in that was that I had to let Lee go, right? This thing that I wanted more than anything else. I had to let Lee go. And for me, I went and I scheduled some time with a local priest. And remember, I wasn't raised in church. I wasn't raised praying. I wasn't raised with any of that stuff. I scheduled this time with this priest. I walk in, I sit down, and he said, what can I do for you? And I said, look, God has been having his way with me in prayer and meditation. It is very clear to me that I am supposed to be a member of this Catholic thing that you've got going on, because apparently you have some spiritual tools that I can't access anywhere else. I said, so sprinkle me, dunk me, do whatever it is you got to get done. But I need access to some of the spiritual tools. And he was like, boy, and you're really excited to be here. And I was like, look, God disciplines me and he sent me here. And that's the only reason I'm here. I know as a member, and I explained to him, I said, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I do not continue to grow spiritually, I will not be able to stay sober. And I've been sober a while and I like being sober. I have a life that's worth living because I'm a sober member and I have to grow. And he has told me I have to come here. And I said, and I just broke up with this guy and released him because he doesn't even pray. And God wants me to be with someone who loves him the way I do. And so I am in the middle of a lot of change here right now, buddy. And if you would just let me in and show me where the spiritual toolkit is, I'd be really grateful. So this starts this year-long process of me getting to know what the Catholic faith had to offer in the way of spiritual tools. And what happened in that relationship was very simple. God needed me to get out of Lee's way, right? Because I would have told you I'm spiritual enough for both of us, right? Like, he doesn't need to pray. I got this. And what God needed me to release Lee so that Lee could begin to have his own experience. And what Lee did was he went into his battalion chaplain and he said, Chaps, Deb left me. And the chaplain said, man, what'd you do? And he said, I didn't do anything, I don't think. She said that she left me for God. And the chaplain's like, well, tell me exactly what she's doing. And so Lee told him what I was doing. And the chaplain looked at him and said, man, like, I've met Deb. She's pretty great. I think I'd go to Mass if I were you. Like, right? Like, this is what you should do. So what happened was, and see, God knows what's coming in my life, right? Not from this weird predestination, he knows every decision I'm going to make thing, but he knows what's coming in my life. And so God always goes before me and he prepares the path that I'm going to need to be on. That's my belief. And so Lee comes back to me and says, if it's Catholic, it's Catholic, I'm in. And so Lee and I walk through this 8-month-long preparation to enter into the Catholic faith together. Because here's the deal. I have a spiritual language. I have a spiritual practice. I have all of you. Lee didn't have any of that. Lee had no spiritual practice. Lee did not have an active connection to God, although he believed in him. He didn't have an active faith-filled relationship with him. And he also did not have a spiritual language. And what happened over that 8-month period is that Lee and I learned a spiritual language that we could use in our relationship with one another. That process for us happened at Easter in 2005. And at Easter in 2006, after being faithful to completing that process, I was baptized and Lee and I became Catholic together on the same day during the same ceremony. And we had been going to Mass consistently that entire time together. We would talk about the readings together. I would talk to him about the practical application of the spiritual principles of the teachings that we had gotten out of the readings from the church thing. And Uli and I began to put God in the middle of our relationship. And we began to have a prayer language that we shared with one another. And it changed everything. We got married just after we joined the church. And a couple of months after we were married, Lee left and he went to war. And when Lee went to war, I had to deepen my spiritual practice and I had to deepen my faith and my reliance on God. That's how this thing works. Because it occurred to me one day that people are shooting at my husband on purpose. And so I had to go to God in a way that I had never gone to him before. Even though I had this really active and I think, you know, pretty healthy connection with God, I had to rely on him in a way that I had not before. I had to abandon myself to him in a way that I couldn't pull off before. But the powerlessness of knowing that my husband's being shot at on purpose, that experience of powerlessness delivered me into the arms of God in this really complete surrendered way. And because of that, I got to have this experience where I began to practice living in the presence, right? Like I was living in the presence of God. For me, visually, I started to see God as this golden light, right? That is the shape of a human, but doesn't have any like features, right? Not male, not female, but just this golden light that is shaped like a human. And I could see God all around me when I was going through my day. And when I would be standing up, like at a podium in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would see these golden threads, like going like from heart to heart, right? Like all over the room, there's this really cool web of this golden light that would just spread across the audience from time to time when I was talking. And it was just bringing me to tears. Like I'm on the podium and I'm like, God, look at you. Like, this is what we meant when Bill wrote in the book that deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Like, that's where you live. Like, look at you. And having this experience where I was starting to understand the requirement of community in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right, the requirement of connectedness in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in order for me to be a proper member of this community, and in order for me to be properly connected to you, I have to abandon myself increasingly to God's care and direction. Because I have to rely on him to fulfill those basic instincts of life, which is what the initial reading was about when we started this meeting, right? We all want to be somebody, have somebody, and have all of our needs met. But I cannot be in the business of wrestling balance between those three instincts out of this life. If I'm in the business of fulfilling my own instincts, I'm screwed and so are you, right? I am, because there's not enough of anything and I'm the girl that settles for just enough, right? And so I have to, in my experience of God, I have to go to him and I have to allow him to balance those instincts for me. And I can only do that when I am properly inserted in the middle of the community of Alcoholics Anonymous. And make no mistake about it. If I am in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and I am not spiritually connected, I will be operating from a base of fear. I will be utilizing character defects to manipulate outcomes. I will be stepping on the toes of my fellows. And therefore, I will not have balanced instincts. I won't. All of that is connected. 100% that is connected. And so, like, I always understood, like, intellectually, I understood how all of that was connected, right? Like, the knee bone is connected to the leg bone, is connected to the ankle bone kind of thing. Like, intellectually, I had gotten it. And I had had an experience of that through the times I had gone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But in this particular period of true powerlessness, which is about 10 or 11 years ago for me, I really understood, as I watched God connect all of us, I really understood how my reliance on Him equates to my reliance on being a member of Him. Right? The better member of Alcoholics, and the more in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous I am, the more connected I am to God, the more work of His I get to do, right? The more focused I am on the will of God. And it just deepens. It just deepens. And so, you know, Lee's gone to war, and he and I, like, I realized about halfway through that deployment to Iraq why it was that God drove me to the Catholic Church, right? Because Lee needed to be Catholic. Lee needed to have the relationship with the priest who is deployed with them. Lee needed to have some spiritual language. He's like, when he would call me, and every time I talked to him, I was able to say to him, what's going on for you right now that I can lift up in prayer on your behalf? We didn't have that language before God's spiritual rearrangement. We didn't have those kinds of conversations, right? I couldn't help do some of the spiritual supportive work on behalf of Lee and his men before Lee and I became Catholic together, right? Had I continued to resist, had I continued to fight that, I don't know that I would have had a marriage, but I certainly know that even if I had had a marriage, I wouldn't have the relationship that I had, that I got to have with Lee. And Lee, you know, and Lee went to war a couple of times, and every time he went, like, I had to deepen that experience of God, right? Like, you know, lack of power is our dilemma, right? There was no truer place for me than when I was in the middle of those deployments. And so I had to stay plugged into the source of power that is unending. And when Lee got back from Afghanistan, they had lost a lot of men during their deployment to Afghanistan and Helmand Province. And Lee did not come all the way home for a while, right? Like he carried the war home, and it was heavy. It was a burden. And I had to stay surrendered, and I had to sleep in God's arms even when Lee was back, because I said, God, I don't know how to be the kind of wife that can bring a husband home from war. I don't know what part of this work is mine, and I don't know how to do it. So I would wake up in the morning and I would say, okay, God, I guess we're doing another day today. Tell me what you want me to think and feel and say and do in order to support this man, my husband. Right? I mean, just this, like, walking hand in hand with my Creator, because I do not know how to be of the proper kind of service. And again, it was just that abandoning. And the more open I became to God showing me the way, the more active God became in my life and showed me the way. And when Lee had been home just a couple of months from Afghanistan, he had had some significant healing, had a lot to do with this motorcycle trip that we went on, but that's a tale for another day. I was working for the Marine Corps at the time as well, and I had gotten home from work, and Lee had not yet gotten home, and it was, you know, an hour or so. And what happened that night, it was on April 28th, 11 years ago, Lee was killed in an automobile accident on his way home from work. And because of, you know, and there are a lot of people that, you know, when I tell them the story, they're like, well, that was a kick in the teeth, wasn't it? Like, you know, you've been doing all this work with God. You don't think that He could have created a different outcome? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Do I wish that Lee would still be in my life? Of course, I miss him every day. He was my best friend. Of course. You know, do I understand why all things happen on this earth? Of course I do not. But the bottom line is this. when Lee was killed that night on his way home from work, when I got that news, because I had struck that deal several times by taking the third step, there are moments when prayers just begin in me, right? Because proper care of me when times like that occur is that I go straight to God. I will not always begin prayer on my own. So prayer began in me. And I said, God, I can't breathe. And what happened is that golden light that I had been living with for a couple of years, that golden light came and wrapped itself around me from behind like a beloved wrapping up their beloved. And what I heard was, I'm here. I'm 38 years old and I'm a widow. And I had finally gotten it, right? Like the right guy, the right way, for the right reasons, in the right order. Right? Like I'd even given him up for God and here I am. And all of the old timers are at my house the next day, right? And they're sitting around the table and they're drinking coffee and they're explaining to me how it is perfectly fine for me to get angry with God, right? It's perfectly fine. Just get angry with God. He's big enough. He can take it. And I'm listening to them, right? Because that's what I do. I listen to old timers and I'm listening to him and I'm thinking, there's got to be another way, right? Because every relationship where I insert anger, the relationship suffers and dies. That's the reality of that, right? We know that. It's all throughout our literature, right? We all have stories of how we've killed relationships with anger. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to get angry. And when that happens, right? And I'm just like, there's got to be another way. And so in this woman, Christine, who's a member of Alcoholics, she's at my house, right? And she's got the phone and she's just taking messages from everybody who's calling from all over the place. And she brings me the phone and she said, there's a man on the phone and he says he has a message for you from God. And I was like, oh, and she said, it's Walter from Houston. And I was like, oh my God, it's Walter, right? My messenger. And so I get on the phone and Walter says, darling, I love you. I said, Walter, I love you too. He said, I am so sorry. I said, thank you, Walter, me too. And he said, but I was just meditating. I was praying for you and meditating, right? So he's sitting in guidance. And he said, and God told me to call you right away because he has a message for you. And I said, okay. And he said, God wanted you to know that there are things in this world that break his heart. And Lee's death is one of them. And therefore, he will be grieving alongside you. And you are to rest in his arms. And I was like, oh my God, that's the other way. That's the other way. Like I actually get to walk through this huge process without getting angry with God. I get to walk through this heavy sadness, whatever comes, right? I get to grieve out loud and I don't have to put anger between me and God. And what an incredible gift that was. Because what God did for me is he continued to wrap me up. I continued to see him wherever I went. There were nights when I would lay down in bed and I'd be like, God, I cannot sleep. I miss him so much. And God would just come and wrap me up. And he would spoon me, right? If you haven't been spooned by God, keep working on it because it's awesome, right? But he would just wrap me up and I would drift off to sleep. And I grieved out loud and I told the truth. And I told my home group members, I said, guys, I'm going to be really sad for a really long time. Please don't be scared of it. When you come visit me and I am in my sadness, I promise I will not put an anchor around your neck and keep you there. Right? So come in and just be with me for a minute. I'll let you go. But I'm going to need you now more than ever. And my home group was just amazing during that period. And so I started having sushi with our priest every couple 3 weeks. He and I would go to sushi, And he was very, very close to Lee as well. He was a Marine chaplain and priest, and he had been deployed with Marines to war as well. And he and Lee were very close, and Father Ski. And one night I walk in, and I'm just bawling, right? And he's like, "Oh my God, what's wrong?" And I was like, "You know, Father, I need you to tell me everything you believe to be true about purgatory, right? Because that's one of those Catholic things that I was like, I'm not digging that, right? Like, I don't believe in that 100%. They let me become Catholic anyway, by the way, even though I didn't believe in everything. And he said, "Why do you ask?" And I said, "Father, I need to know where my husband is." And he said, "Deb, I don't talk about this much because they'd probably call the bishop on me, right?" He said, "But I believe that this human existence is purgatory." He said, "If you think about it, purgatory is the place where we go to choose God more completely and to shed all things that are not of God, so that when it is time for us to live with God, our soul can go in its purest form and connect back to God." He said, "So I really think that this human experience we're having is actually purgatory." He said, "Because think about that." He said, "Lee was no more spiritually fit, physically fit, finally mentally fit, and emotionally stable than the day he died." He said, he got there. And he got there in large part because you let him go and God got to have a relationship directly with him rather than happen to work through you." And I was like, "Oh my God, that's what that was about. That's what that was about." And I just collapsed in his arms again. And you know, I would love, well, that's what my life is about. That's what it's about. My life is about seeking God's direction, resisting a little at first, because, you know, that's how I roll, and eventually surrendering and practicing living in the presence of God. And I can only do that when I have just a smidge of open-mindedness, a smidge of willingness, and God just kind of wedges his way in there and opens me up that much more and that much more and that much more. And I have an incredible life because I know who I am. I know who I belong to. I'm actually one of God's favorites. He's told me that. And I get to live in service to you. And I get to accept service from you so that I can be a member of this community, right in the middle, fully connected, fully loved. And I get to learn and I get to grow by watching all of you learn and grow. And sometimes you let me love you. And when you do that, and when you let me into your life, I get to have an experience of God that's different than any other I've ever had. And that's why I think Dr. Bob, at the end of his story, he said that it's an actual, what was it? It's an actual joy, right? To be able to work with others. It's an actual joy. I don't experience God without you. I don't. God doesn't come and speak to me directly. He knows that would just freak me out. You know, but when Stacy calls me at 2 o'clock in the morning because I sent her a text, and so she thinks that means I'm wide awake, I get to actually have an experience of God that is unique to having the experience through Stacy and all the rest of you, right? I really think that the essence of step 11 is not only seeking that expanded experience of God, but when we find a place where we can sit all the way down, don't be afraid to act as if you found something and dive right there and go as deep as you can. My sister called me not too long ago. I know my time's up. My sister called me, I don't know, a couple of years ago now, I guess. And she said, "I want what you have." And I said, well, what do I have that you want? And she said, Deb, I want to be fearless. I am so scared all the time. And I said, you think I'm fearless? And she said, you are. She said, and you just assume every time you walk in a room that everybody's going to like you. She said, you walk up and you talk to everyone. She said, and that's fearlessness. And I just kind of was like, oh my God, she's right. She's right. I know who I am. I know who I belong to. And I know that I live in God like a fish lives in water. Guys, thank you so much for having me with you.
Wow. Thank you so much, Deb. That was so powerful. Thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. I'm not surprised you're one of God's favorites.
As are you, Cynthia.
Thank you. All right. We will take a moment of silence and then end with the Lord's Prayer. If we could have that moment now. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.